Let's say I'm a med-surg nurse and I'm getting a report from PACU on a post-op patient I'll be receiving. Maybe as part of that report, they share with me that the patient has a history of schizophrenia. Or perhaps they share with me that the patient or the loved ones is feeling very anxious and fearful about either the surgery itself or the recovery. So how do I take all that information in and make sure that I'm giving appropriate care, remembering the old adage that all nurses are psych nurses? We're joined by guest Jim Pahotsky today to talk about all of this and more. Hi, and welcome to Nurse Essentials, a Cleveland Clinic podcast where we discuss all things nursing, from patient care to advancing your career to navigating tough on-the-job issues. We're so glad you're here. I'm your host, Carol Pahotsky, Associate Chief Nursing Officer of Surgical Services Nursing. As nurses, we're charged to take care of our whole patients, how they come to us. Sometimes those patients come to us with medical surgical needs, but sometimes they also come to us with behavioral health needs. And really making sure that we are sensitive to that, really treating the whole patient, meeting them where they're at, and really focusing on everything they need as a whole person. That can be intimidating, though, for nurses, especially those who aren't as familiar with behavioral health care. Our guest today is Jim Pahotsky. Jim is a bedside nurse at Cleveland Clinic Lutheran Hospital, serving the nursing needs of behavioral health patients for almost 40 years. As you may have noticed, he is also my husband, so I'm thrilled to be joined with you today as an expert in behavioral health care.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
So you have such a passion around the care for patients with behavioral health needs, no matter where they're receiving care, and it's a specialty that sometimes is not well understood or appreciated by the nursing community at large. Can you start off by telling us a little bit more about why you were drawn to behavioral health nursing in the first place and why you remain so passionate about the specialty?
It's kind of a funny story. I kind of stumbled into nursing. I was between jobs as a young man, and my dear departed brother worked at Fairview General Hospital. And he happened to look on the board and said, "Jim, did you ever think about healthcare as a job?" I hadn't done that, although I had done several jobs that involved working with people, and I knew that I was kind of a people person and liked that direction. So I said, what the heck? I went ahead and applied for that job, and they accepted me. I was working as a mental health tech on a psychiatric unit, and I did that role for many years and really enjoyed it. And then, as fate would have it, I met a wonderful lady who said, well, you know, if you like this, maybe you'd like being a nurse even better. That would be my wife, Carol. And went ahead and went to nursing school, and the rest is history. I've had several roles on my unit, 3C, at Lutheran Hospital. It is a Cleveland Clinic higher-functioning psychiatric unit, and I've been an RN with them for, probably going on 15 years now. Been the charge nurse on that unit. I am the person that trains new nurses on how to be a good psych nurse. So shame on me after all these years if I haven't learned a few things about being a psych nurse.
So in nursing school, knowing that you had some behavioral health experience before you came to nursing school, obviously part of nursing school is exposure to all sorts of different specialties. And yet, was there ever a consideration of something else, or was it always laser focused to this is where I need to be? I'm looking forward to expanding my skill set as a nurse, but behavioral health is where I'm meant to be.
I've always felt that I'd be a psych nurse. Some of the other disciplines interested me a little bit, but my passion is in mental health nursing. And I think that's where I belong, and that's where I can serve my patients best.
Certainly. So certainly we know that patients sometimes come to the hospital for very specific behavioral health needs, and they end up in a unit perhaps like yours. But we also know that sometimes they need surgery. They have medical care needs, and so they're really getting their primary care in an ICU, in an OR, in a PACU, in a med-surg floor. So knowing that every nurse gets to take a semester of behavioral health nursing as part of their curriculum, but knowing that not everybody's comfortable in that space, what are some things that nurses outside of behavioral health should be addressing with patients that have those types of diagnoses?
Well, we have a little saying in nursing, all nurses are psych nurses. The reason being is even when you're on a medical unit, something has happened to that person. We call it stress. And stress can change a lot of things for a person. It's common knowledge that patients that come in with heart trouble, heart attacks, heart surgeries, etc., almost always receive some kind of depression as a little something extra to go with their diagnosis. And it's important for us to be mindful of that as nurses, because that might be something that A, needs to be treated, and B, if it's treated, it may improve the prognosis of that patient.
Absolutely. How do we best advocate for patients who have an additional diagnosis of behavioral health need when they're having surgery? Maybe their medications have been put on hold as part of that surgery, or they came in unable to tolerate their medications. What are some things that a medical surgical nurse, for example, should be looking for to advocate for that patient's needs?
Well, every kind of mental health diagnosis, and there are many, many different kinds of diagnoses, can involve a patient having a physical problem going on as well. A person with a diagnosis of paranoid schizophrenia, for example, may need a knee surgery at some point. A person with profound depression may have some type of diagnosis where they end up having that heart surgery. What's going to happen to the person who's already depressed when they come out of that heart surgery? So a good nurse is going to make sure that before that patient has that surgery, they're going to want to know that patient's history. It would be important to know that a patient, such as someone who has delusions, someone who has some type of paranoia, may have to go off their medications in order to have that surgery for various reasons. Some medications may have an adverse effect on anesthesia. Some medications may affect bleeding, etc. And the surgeon may say, well, I will go ahead and do this surgery, but this patient needs to be off this medication for X amount of days. Well, what does that mean for someone who relies on that medication to be stable mentally? It could really cause a problem. Plus, when that patient comes in out of anesthesia, we don't know how that patient's going to react. So if a good nurse is making sure they know that patient's history, then that is a one big step to helping that patient stay safe, especially when they come out of that surgery. They may not have their faculties about them. They may get anxious. They may be confused or delusional. They may be afraid. What do people do when they're afraid? They may strike out. They may grab something as a weapon to defend themselves because they're frightened. What could those weapons be? They could be the stethoscope that's around your neck. They could be the pair of scissors that's sitting on the bedside table. When you think about it, in that area, there's lots of things that can be used as a weapon against someone who is not expecting it. Now, in mental health, we're trained to expect those things.
Sure.
We take classes to expect those things. When we are rounding in our psychiatric units, we're always looking for ways that a patient may be able to use an object as a weapon or something to hurt themselves. But our med-surg nurses, our ICU nurses, etc., they may not have that training. So they may neglect to think about, when this patient comes out, how is their mental state going to be? And that's when they're vulnerable.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned, obviously, my specialty is mostly PACU nursing. And there's even a phenomenon in recovery from anesthesia called emergence delirium, where somebody without any history of behavioral health needs has a reaction to anesthesia that is literally a delirium. They are extremely confused. They can start that fear, like you mentioned. It's there's not an intentionality there. They're fearful for their lives, and they're in that true fight or flight syndrome, and it has nothing to do with any other input other than how their body's reacting to that anesthesia. And seeing nurses have to jump back from that situation because that patient is so incredibly terrified that they think they're protecting their lives, it can do really dramatic things to people.
Well, absolutely. And it has happened where nurses, PACU nurses, nurses that have been taking care of patients that are coming out of anesthesia have been hurt by these types of patients. And it's not that the patients are looking to hurt anybody intentionally.
Yeah.
It's an issue of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Many of our patients have had anesthesia before, and they're always asked, have you ever had a reaction to anesthesia?
Yeah.
But what about the person who's going under anesthesia for the first time? Taking those steps to keep the patient and yourself safe at that moment when that patient comes out of anesthesia is the smart move.
So you mentioned really being cognizant of your environment. So we think about sort of the typical medical surgical unit. What are some of the sort of the number one things that, you know, med-surg nurse might walk into a room and think, this is what everything I need in here to take care of the patients. But you're looking at it from a different lens. So appreciating that, you know, whether there's a diagnosis or not, somebody who's afraid, somebody who's stressed, may be looking, unfortunately, to harm themselves or in that fear reaction, protect themselves against their caregivers. So what are some things that nurses should be assessing their physical environment for and perhaps taking measures to remove those or make them less available?
Well, on our psychiatric units, they're much more Spartan than the medical units, first of all, and that's by design.
Sure.
Because we know that patients can use virtually anything as a weapon. We've had nurses get hit with food trays, something as simple as that. Part of it is using your assessment skills, your depending on how far away you are from your mental health training, remembering what it was like to work on a psychiatric unit, remembering what it was like to see the looks on patients' faces. When you walk into a room, sometimes you're greeted with a smile, sometimes you're greeted with a look of fear.
Mm-hmm.
That tells you something.
Sure.
After all my years in mental health, I've become a pretty good reader of people's faces, and you can kind of tell when people are in distress. And that's the moment where you have to say to yourself, what's going on here? How can I assess this correctly? You might want to start asking questions, but you also might want to start assessing your environment mm-hmm. for weapons. In the event that you're in a situation where a patient looks like they're about to strike out, you want to make sure that your exit is not blocked,
because mm-hmm.
you might want to get out of there and then go get some help. There's always strength in numbers. If you're alone in a room with a patient, you're much more vulnerable than if you have a team there, especially a team that's maybe has some training or some experience in dealing with this kind of patient. The patient that comes in and is on the medical unit and has that history of paranoid schizophrenia may be very frightened at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we know what happens to frightened people, frightened animals, frightened anything. They're very capable of striking out.
And so sometimes one of the interventions that anyone would use in healthcare is having a sitter with that patient, somebody who stays with them to get them what they need and also sort of survey the environment. So what are some things that we need to make sure our sitters know? These are often unlicensed caregivers of varying levels of experience, and maybe they're used to sitting with somebody who's at risk for falls. So now we're saying, yes, we still need to sit with this patient, but the primary focus, while there may also be a fall need, is really on that patient, their own safety as well as the safety of their caregiver. So what are some different pieces of advice you'd give to a sitter in that situation to make sure that they know when to call for help or what they should be looking in the room for?
Well, at Lutheran Hospital, for instance, we have many people that serve as sitters. They are usually our behavioral health techs. These are employees that we have. They're like nurses' aides, but they're specially trained in the psychiatric field. So they're trained to keep their eyes open for things that the patient may do to either harm themselves or harm other people. The sitters at our hospital will be mindful of, for instance, the patient's access to sharp objects, patient's access to items that might be used as a blunt instrument. Our sitters also need to be mindful of the patient's ability to stay stable. These patients are, for whatever reason, in the hospital. They're on medications. They could be on pain medications. They could be on sleeping medications. And they may be at increased risk for fall.
Sure. Maybe they didn't come in with a fall risk, but we know that many of these medications can affect people's blood pressure, for example, and make them a risk for falling. Sure.
Well, when that patient needs to be toileted, for example, they may need some assistance to the bathroom. That means that sitter will be in very close proximity
sure.
to that patient.
Yeah.
Both things can occur. The patient can A, need to go to the bathroom, and B, be confused.
Yes.
And when that happens, the sitter is vulnerable. So the sitter needs to be able to assess the patient's ability to understand reality at that point, because both are at risk. Mm-hmm. So my advice to that sitter would be, assess the patient's cognitive abilities every chance you get, and let that patient's nurse know what's going on.
Especially any acute changes, sure.
Sure, because that nurse may be able to treat something, or may even be able to consult a psychiatrist or a resident to come over and assess the patient further. Maybe we can better serve this patient by maybe not just treating the patient's physical, but also treating this patient's mental state.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned sharp objects and blunt instruments, but it can be as simple as the cap of a pen or a paperclip, things that, you know, somebody, again, in that fight or flight instance could really use to hurt them, or at least attempt to hurt themselves. So it's sometimes it's the big thing, but it's also little things too. I remember we were given lanyards as a Nurses Week gift specific to the unit I worked on at the time, and I brought it home and you said, you can't wear that, because there wasn't a breakaway latch on it. It was just a continuous lanyard. And you right away said, someone's going to get hurt. And it was that moment where you're like, oh, wow, you're absolutely right. Again, assuming no bad intents, it's right there. And somebody in that fight or flight moment could use it to really hurt me. So it's things that the rest of us as nurses maybe aren't looking for, to really take that breath and reflect back on our behavioral training to determine, is this the right move or not? So let's say I'm that med-surg nurse and I've been taking care of a patient who has a history of schizophrenia, but they came to us for a knee replacement, for example, and it's time for them to start doing discharge planning. So obviously lots of physical care needs I need to be thinking of, but what can I be doing as a medical surgical nurse to really advocate for the psychological well-being of this patient upon their discharge?
Well, these patients may have been taking off their meds for this surgery. At some point, the doctor is going to want to restart those medications. Depending on how long that patient's been off the medications, there may be side effects involved in restarting these medications. The nurse needs to be mindful of those side effects, as well as any reactions that the patient may have to any new medications that they've had to start because of the surgery.
Sure.
So those are all things that are being looked at by the doctor, by the nurses, to make sure that that patient's getting restarted on those meds doesn't cause other problems or more complications. The patients themselves may or may not have been followed up on the outside. Fortunately for us at Lutheran Hospital, and I believe that's the case for all Cleveland Clinic hospitals, there is a team of social workers on premises that's more than happy to come out, speak with this patient, assess this patient, and to make sure that this patient is set up with all the services that they may require when they get out. Our patients with schizophrenia, for example, stop seeing their outpatient services for various reasons.
Sure, getting reconnected to that.
Helping them getting reconnected to that service is something that they may desperately need. Also, our psychiatrists are available as well to come in and do a consult, and the nurses may suggest that consult. So we have a team at Lutheran Hospital that makes sure that all of our patients that are on the med-surg units can get full mental health services so that they can thrive when they get discharged.
Yeah, it's not just about discharge, it's thriving. And really, no matter where you're listening from, really making sure that we go back to the knowledge that we have to be taking care of this whole person is, can we set them up with appointments on the outside, or perhaps connect them to services they haven't been connected to make sure that their whole body is healing and that they're safe. Depending on how long they've been off these medications, they may not have, for lack of better terms, kicked back in. So is there a window of time where we need to be worried about their safety after they leave us because the full effect of their medications hasn't kicked back in yet?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about, you know, both patients and family members. As you mentioned, certainly it's incredibly stressful to either be in a hospital or have your loved one in a hospital. And sometimes that stress comes out in certain behaviors. So obviously, we want to do everything we can to prevent that harm or that escalation where somebody feels like they have to physically do something because they've gotten to that point. What, as nurses, should we be assessing for to determine if a family member or a patient is feeling escalated, and what can we do about that?
Well, when it comes to the escalation of patients, we get to know our patients. Our patients are usually with us for a period of time, and we have spent enough time with them to know when they are starting to escalate. That's an important part of my training for the new nurses, is I want to help them understand what's going on mentally with that patient in their mood. However, with visitors, it's not so easy. You might be seeing these people for the first time. And as you said in the very beginning, stressful things can happen. Stress is very important to understand as a psych nurse, because it's stress that can take a person from being a regular, normal person into a state of mental duress. And things can happen in that state.
Or you think about the med-surg patient we've just met. So I have to be able to assess. I don't know what your baseline is. So what are some behaviors or some tells, if you will, where we can see without really, like your example of the family member, where I'm just getting to meet this person, but I can tell that I might need to intervene?
I would think that most people are like me. Something happens to one of my loved ones, my stress level has gone up.
Sure.
And my ability to reason has gone down. So a lot of times we will get visitors that come in that are very worried about their people. And when that happens, well, I don't know what their ability to handle stress is.
Sure.
Many of them can get angry pretty quickly, especially if they think their loved one isn't being served properly. I want to make sure that that person is reassured that we're offering top-notch care to that patient, that we will communicate with them to the extent that the patient will allow us to. Our patients all do still have HIPAA rights. And those HIPAA rights do play a part in what kind of communication we can give to the visitors. And sometimes they get very irritated if our patients have not signed HIPAA rights. We can't just willy-nilly tell family members, friends, every detail about what's going on with the patient without the patient's permission.
And that's everywhere, not just behavioral health.
That is everywhere. Yeah. That is a law. Mm-hmm. That can trigger loved ones as well. But the good nurse makes sure that the visitors understand that, because most visitors do understand that. Also, as a good mental health nurse, you use your skills. Part of your skills are de-escalating stressed out patients. And you can do that with the visitors too. A good psych nurse uses it probably everywhere, maybe even at the grocery store.
Or perhaps with his wife.
Exactly. So using all your skills and all your powers to de-escalate the patients and de-escalate the staff is going to serve you the best.
And so listening, making sure that that patient or family member feels reassured, being very descriptive and concrete in the plan of care and the next step. Anything else in terms of tools that a nurse could use to de-escalate either a patient or their loved one?
Our de-escalation skills for our patients oftentimes involve, at least for myself as well, trying to bring that patient back down to some reality. Patients and visitors as well get angry. And when you get angry, sometimes you let your emotions take you places.
Sure.
Where I'm going with that is having that patient take a step back, take a deep breath, remember where you're at. You're in a hospital.
Sure, reorienting them, yeah.
Surrounded by nurses and doctors that want to care for you. You don't want to hurt anybody here. We want to help you. Remember that. I understand you're in pain. I understand things aren't going the way you'd like to have them. But we're here to help. Let us help. And most of the time, unless the patient's going through some extreme delusion,
sure,
most of the time that works.
All right. Well, you've given our listeners some great tools and pieces of advice moving forward. So we thank you for sharing your expertise. We're going to wrap up with just a couple of questions that are more about you as a nurse and person of the world. It's our speed round. So I'm wondering if you'll tell us, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
That's a tough one. I've received so much good advice over the years. especially from my loved ones, my wife.
Oh, stop.
going into nursing was some pretty good advice because it's a career that I love. And sometimes I think to myself, you know, I would do this for free if I had plenty of wealth. I did read something years ago that I thought was quite profound. It was by, I believe, Eleanor Roosevelt. And it was, nobody can make you mad without your permission.
Yep.
And I gave that a long and hard think because, you know, when you're young and you're still trying to figure things out, sometimes little things trip your triggers. And then I realized, you know, when you get mad or you let somebody get you mad, you give that person a heck of a lot of power over you. Because I don't like how I feel when I'm mad. I never have. And that's helped me stay a little more even keel. I like to think I'm an even keel person because don't get too mad about things anymore.
I can attest to that. All right. Well, thank you, Jim, so much for joining us and sharing your wisdom with us today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
As always, thanks so much for joining us for today's discussion. Don't miss out. Subscribe to hear new episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, we want to hear from you. Do you have ideas for future podcasts or want to share your stories? Email us at nurseessentials@ccf.org. To learn more about nursing at Cleveland Clinic, please check us out at clevelandclinic.org/nursing. Until next time, take care of yourselves and take care of each other. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute medical or legal advice. Consult your local state boards of nursing for any specific practice questions.